Hey everybody, Josh Sheridan, World Alternative Media here, and of course we're joined by author and economic analyst here at WAM, John Snyson, and we are joined, of course, by Tim Pachote as well over Zoom, and we are going to talk about not just 2020, but the 2020s today, because there's a lot to go into. A lot of people are uncertain where the economy is going, where the stock market's going, where gold, silver, crypto's going, and we're going to try and go into all of that as best we can today. But first, I want to talk about this decade that we're finishing here. It is the end of a decade after all, and we can't go without talking about this decade that everyone seems to think we didn't have a recession. John, like for the last year, I've been seeing all of these news articles about how the 2020s was the first decade in history without a recession. From my perspective, I see it as the entire decade was a recession. It's just been papered over. We've gone into that before. First, I'm going to go to you, and then I'm going to go to Tim about this, but I wanted to ask you, John, what your thoughts are on the 2010s as far as the economy goes, because I don't think anyone expected to see everything prolonged and pushed off as long as we have.
I would almost call it a lost decade, you know, from the recessionary, the depressionary facts that, you know, since 2008, we've really been in a depression, but we have just papered over. We, you know, bought the central bank, you know, increased their balance sheet by buying up toxic assets for, you know, almost $4 trillion worth of, you know, terrible assets like mortgage-backed securities and bonds and so on. That, you know, basically they were assets that were not valid anymore. They weren't really assets anymore. They were just pieces of garbage laying around. And so the central banks had to buy these from the entities. And of course, Japan, you know, we're starting to see what we saw in Japan with the heights of 2000. You know, you had the heights there back in the 80s, but of course we had more heights in the stock market here, but they've been buying up every single asset that they can get their hands on, because they had to. There was no way out of it. If they hadn't bought up all the ETFs, well, not all of them, but 86.11%+ that they have, the ETF market would have blown up, and if they didn't buy all their debt, nobody would have bought their debt, so they would have been bankrupt. So that's what's going on right now. We kind of entered into a suspended animation period since 2010, where they basically have to put in all these monetary measures, the central banks, you know, lowering interest rates, buying assets from everyone in order to be able to prop up the system and hold it alive. Because if you don't, it's going to fall apart pretty quickly. And if you get a deflationary pressure on the economy, that's their worst fear in the central bankers' history, is if they get that deflationary pressure and becomes too big, there's no way out of it other than hyperinflation right away.
Right. And of course, this is something that has been on the horizon for quite some time. I have to note that while we're mostly talking about the U.S. economy in this video, it plays into the global economy, into Canada, Britain, elsewhere. I mean, we're talking about the world reserve currency after all, and how that affects the rest of the world. It's massive. But Tim, let's go to you in a much warmer place over there in Arizona. And can you go into how would you sum up the 2010s yourself?
Yeah, so I mean, most of the mainstream economists, or if you turn it on CNBC, that's what my name for CNBC, what you'll see is, you know, everyone talking about how great things are, this is the best economy ever, that we've been, you know, this was the best decade ever, first decade without a recession. And, you know, it really depends on, you know, who the best decade, who was it for? Was it for the average American middle class, especially lower class, or was it the best decade for the major corporations, for central bankers, for, you know, all these big oligarchs? And I would say it's got to be the latter, because what happened is people conflate and they use the word economy and stock market sort of simultaneously. And so, you know, everyone here on this channel knows that, you know, a lot of money printing has been going on. And, you know, personally, I didn't foresee that. I did actually call the Dow would be at 20,000 when it was below 7,000. Now, I did not think it would get up to 28,000. I did not think we'd have $17 trillion of negative interest rates. I didn't think we'd have any negative interest rates. And so, you know, I don't want to make it sound like I know everything, because a lot of stuff I didn't see that was coming up. So it'd be really interesting to see, you know, when we do this again 10 years from now, which, you know, we probably won't be on YouTube, because, you know, who knows if we'll be here 10 days from now, let alone 10 years from now. But for me, you know, it really was a decade where, you know, you probably saw the middle class more and more middle class slip into lower class. And yeah, you know, people are out there, they're buying things on payments. But, you know, I saw articles the other day on, I believe on Zero Hedge, where there's some states where 40% of consumers are delinquent. You know, you've got a huge amount of Americans don't even have $1,000 if they were to try to come up with it. I mean, gigantic percentages. I mean, all the baby boomers who have, you know, hardly any money to retire on. And so these are terrible statistics in the, you know, coming off of all these so-called great stuff that's going on. And you guys mentioned everything was papered over, where these major corporations got basically free money, money next to nothing. Then they used that to buy back their own stock. And then it made the richest people get even richer. And not that I'm against wealth or capitalism, but, you know, it's a crony capitalist system, because you and I can't go to the central bank and get money for nothing and then play the same games that they play.
And, so and then extort the populace to pay off the interest on it.
Yeah, and that's just, you know, it's all a tool of control. That's what debt is. And unfortunately, I know I do see that this is that more and more people will be slipping into lower class and not able to save, not able to afford. And people always want to think like, oh, these millionaires. Well, a millionaire is not going to be worth anything. You know.
No, there's going to be trillionaires in this new decade, Tim.
Yeah, you're going to
trillionaires.
Yeah, and then I've seen other statistics too, where you know it was gigantic percentages, like 70, 80, 90% of millennials think that they're never going to have $1 million. Well, believe me, you better have $1 million when you, you know, because at some point $1 million is going to be like, okay, great. You know, you can retire on the equivalent of $12,000 a year by the time you're 65 or 70. And so I see these, a lot of those statistics, the personal financial statistics, getting a lot worse for people. But then I see, you know, when it comes to the official government statistics, those are all BS. Those are rigged. Those are made up. And I see how people claim those, that maybe even those are going to have a lot of hard time going forward in the 2020s. But, you know, we'll save some of that prognostication for later.
Right. And I can't help but think when you're talking about where we're going to be in 10 years as far as a media, definitely not on YouTube. From the rate we're going, we'll be standing on soapboxes talking into hairbrushes for three people to talk or to listen. But we got to hope for the best and look forward towards the future. But
before better than a gulag. So,
but before. Before we go into the future, guys, let's. John has just pulled up a Venezuela stock market chart. And I mean, I think Venezuela and Zimbabwe, I guess, are some of the top focuses as far as a global economy goes over the last 10 years. They're exactly what so many of us have been talking about at a larger scale, obviously, because they're smaller economies, et cetera. But some of the biggest examples of where fiat printing goes wrong, and of course, the US empire intervening and making things worse. John, before we go into the 2020s, let's do this as quick as possible. But can you go into this chart that you have up?
Well, it's all about debt. And the problem is with the stock market in Venezuela, too, it went, you know, hyperbolic. It went all the way up to about, 500,000 points. And now it's down at 79,347 points on the Venezuelan stock exchange. The thing is, you know, you can have, and, you know, this is probably what baffled Tim as well, you know, that it could go that high, but I think it could go just through the roof. I think we could have, you know, the Dow up at like 100,000 potentially with what's coming. I think that's totally possible and not out of the picture at all. But also with, he was talking about, you know, corporations doing share buybacks and all this stuff. We also have, you know, the corporate debt that was issued in 2018 in the United States, 78% of it was rated junk or worse. So that's where we're coming out. We hit peak debt. We hit it back in about 2008 was the start of, but I think we really hit peak debt back in 2015. And then it's just been a slow kind of, we can't really like push too much higher on the debt levels. But the problem is we need a lot of more debt in order to sustain the system. But we're getting that deflationary pressure because the more money you printed, the more money you borrowed, the more deflation you actually get because nobody is able to pay. And it's happened so much faster than we ever have had in history.
Wait, 2015, wasn't that during Jeff Berwick's Shemitah? Sorry, I got to rip.
The business cycle stopped, and it should have happened around 2016, 15, 16, I believe.
And it should have happened 7 years earlier. I just got to rip Jeff Berwick on that one, because that's one of the big things that we have to learn also, as all of us independent medias go. When we talk about the economy, not making precise predictions, like on this date, things are going to happen, because the fundamentals are so far off the table. And John and I have been talking about this for many, many, many years at WAM, for the better part of the last decade, the last 5 years at least. And I just have to point out, I mean, that's something that a lot of people did get wrong when it comes to talking about the alternative to the financial perspective on the global stage is putting dates on things. And that's something that John and I luckily have stayed away from dramatically over the years.
But again, you know, they believe that they actually was going to happen at that time, which it should have happened. Right. But they just manipulate and paper it over, and they have, you know, the business cycle in suspended animation right now. Right. And it's like, oh, yeah, it's not going to happen a debt crisis ever again. It's pretty laughable, it'll go on until it doesn't go on anymore, and then it just collapses in on itself.
Right, exactly. And, I mean, at the end of the day, all fiat currencies eventually revert to their true value of zero. Always have, always will, going back to 10/24/80 in China, as we've been talking for half of the last decade. But I want to go into the future here a bit more, and I'll go to Tim first for this. I want to talk about the year 2020 when we are looking in the rearview mirror at what we've seen this last decade. We have all these so-called economists, Paul Krugman types, that are doing exactly what Ben Bernanke did in 2007, say everything is just great, everything's just peaches, guys.
That is money owed to ourselves.
Yeah, and we are looking into the future, and all these economists, mainstream economists, are saying, the chance of a recession are plummeting. There's no chance of a recession in 2020. Everything's good. Everything's on the upside. We're all looking forward to a bright and prosperous 2020. Tim, before we go into the 2020s as a whole, what are your thoughts on the speculation regarding 2020 that everything's going to be just all right? What is your perspective on 2020 going forward as Donald Trump talks about pulling interest rates to zero, telling the Fed to print? What do you think?
Okay. Yeah. I mean, first I want to touch on what John was saying with Dow 100,000. I mean, it's only a question of when it's going to be 100,000. It just depends what time frame you're looking at. And even what people don't realize is that, you know, when John and I were born, I mean, the stock market was below 1,000 and now we're at 28,000. So with the power of compounding, I mean, I was just doing it right now on my financial calculator that if the market did average 10%, and when you're inflating money, so we're not talking about like a true 10%, but you know, so there's a lot of distortions when you print money to this, but that market has averaged 10% S&P over a long time period. But right now I am talking about the Dow. But yeah, I mean, all you'd really need is at a 10% growth rate, looking at 13 years for the stock market to be at 100,000. And then you're looking at if you average 10% a year, and these are not like hyperinflation numbers. This is just average stuff. You would see stock market of 72,000, Dow of 72,000 in 10 years. Now, I think there's a very good chance it can be a Dow of 72,000 or 100,000 or who knows, even a million. And maybe obviously the million would cause a breakdown of the dollar and that would be the result of a breakdown of the dollar. But when you take a look at these numbers, people a lot of times don't really grasp what the power of compounding means. Now, unfortunately, the debt is also compounding. And so, you know, it really distorts things, you know, quite a bit. But, you know, but I do think that even though if you're looking at like, say, 70,000 to 100,000 on the Dow, you know, at some point it could be down to 15,000 or it could be down to 20,000. And I don't think they'll let it go too much more than 25%, unless it's to try to get Trump out of there, then I'm sure they'll let it go down as much as they need to. But if you, you know, I think that the most they'll let it really go down is 20%. At that point, they'll print even more money to game everything, which is what they did last year, right around this exact time. It was 4 days from
Christmas
now.
Christmas miracle.
Yeah, it was the 26th of December last year when the plunge protection team, Mnuchin, and all the cavalry came to basically.
There's no liquidity crisis, Tim. Sorry.
Yeah, debt is money. Debt is money. Yeah, or the whatever that Krugman was saying. But yeah, I mean, looking into, you know, the speculation on 2020, I don't think Donald Trump, and I don't know if you want me to go here on the political, but I think right now the market is basically pricing in 100% chance of him winning. I think there are a lot of things they're not pricing in. And really, I mean, it's going to be, I think, I mean, either way, I mean, the political tensions, I don't see that getting better anytime soon. And so there's so many different directions we could take this in. But I think going forward, you're going to see 2020, you know, as we were talking before, a lot of more people starting at this decade, I think more people will be, quote unquote, lower class, or moving from middle class to lower middle class, or upper middle class to middle class by the end of the decade. I think that's a pretty easy bet to make. So I don't know what area you want me to get into, whether it's politics or the
Well, specifically the U.S. dollar versus as well the stock market, like your thoughts going forward into 2020 on that, because we hear all these economists saying that everything is going to be great in 2020. I feel like the momentum is going in the opposite direction while we are seeing the stock market get pumped higher and higher. And I honestly think that that is insanely concerning going forward for those that are heavily invested in the stock market. I mean, we're expecting possibly the greatest depression we've ever seen.
Now, there's only, I don't know, like 5-10% of Americans have enough money in the stock market to make any real difference anyway. So the average person, they don't have anything, so they don't have anything to lose, which is when things get, you know, really dangerous. And John had touched on earlier a concept of peak debt. And really, it's not really a concept of peak debt as much as it's a peak minimum interest rate. And so if you are, you know, have 5% interest rates and the debt's $20 trillion, then that's $1 trillion a year in interest. But then if you all of a sudden have, you know, 1% interest rates, then it's not really that big. Then you're looking at $200 million in interest, and it's not $200 billion, and it's not nearly as big of a deal. And so by distorting the interest rate or potentially then having negative interest rates in the future, we could teeter on this whole system where basically everything is rigged and we're just, you know, focusing on a minimum payment as a country. And that's what people are doing, whether it's auto loans that they can't afford, whether it's housing payments that they can't afford, that people are just buying payments. And when you keep interest rate low, it then distorts what the cost of money is and then distorts everyone else's purchasing power.
Well, eventually things come to fruition, as we all know. And, we are seeing that on the streets of most cities throughout North America right now, and in Europe and in Asia and everywhere. It's just homelessness everywhere. John, what do you think?
Well, let me touch upon the negative interest rates there, because think about it, Tim, when you get negative interest rates, and this is happening actually in Denmark right now, where they have mortgages that are in negative interest, if you just had to pay interest only, well, you don't pay interest only in a negative interest rate environment. You actually are getting money that goes toward that you can put towards the loan itself. So basically, they're trying with negative interest rate to suspend, you know, debt and just have like a minimum. Basically, there's not even a minimum payment anymore. It will pay itself automatically. But the problem is with, you know, pushing it to negative, they're going to have to go really deep into negative. They're just going to continue. You know, there's some people, I forgot who it was, but it was on the Max Kaiser, on the Kaiser Report. One of his friends that I had over there, I thought, you know, I heard from economists that it was going to be 4 or 5 negative percent. Like 500 basis points negative. But this guy, he believes that it could go as negative as 25-30%, even that they go just in desperate measures in order to try to revoke the and reinfuse money into the economy, because they want to go cashless, of course, then force you into having to pay these negative interest rates. So you want to spend, because if you keep it in the bank account, in the cashless bank account, you're going to get raped with taxation, which is basically is a negative interest rate. And so they're trying to force velocity into the monetary system again. But the problem is, what if the velocity comes from the stock market? What if that money comes into the real market? What if the real estate money comes into the real market? What is the inflation going to be like then, especially here in Canada with, you know, massive debt bubbles that we have here? You know, looking at the actual affordability that the CPI is measuring is 25%, but well, for 50% of the people in Canada, it's about 67% of the affordability, like of your income goes to your housing instead of 25% that they actually measure against. So the real inflation, and they're actually talking about here in Canada that we're going to see probably 6-8% inflation right now in our groceries, specifically here over the next year. So you're seeing the money is trickling into the economy as, you know, and this, you know a lot about this, Tim, but the baby boomers are starting, they need to start selling assets in order to retire as well. And they're getting forced to, you know, relieve assets and sell them into the economy. But who's going to buy them? So that is a deflationary pressure potentially, because there might not be any other buyers than the Federal Reserve. But then on the other hand, too, all this money that they now sell will be used into the real economy. So suddenly that money is trickling in, creating more inflation into the economy.
Right. And before we go to Tim to respond to that, first, I just got to point out, I mean, like the Roman Empire that we saw before, and we did a video on it. It's on our YouTube channel, the end of the Fall of Empires. But I was in Rome and I was reporting on it at the time, and we're looking at like the coin clipping that they did in ancient Rome, and they clip coins. They don't clip coins anymore. That would be too noticeable. What they do today is they portion foods and drinks. So they, yeah, well, they put lesser metals into the coins, but also they you look at the bottom of a bottle of orange juice these days, and it goes in like your whole hand can fit in it.
Shrinkflation, Josh.
Yeah, shrinkflation, yeah. And it's something that we are watching. It's the exact same as we saw in ancient Rome, just a modern day version of it and a smarter version, learning from the past mistakes. But Tim, can you respond to what John was talking about there?
Yeah, and first, you know, that's a perfect shameless plug into my book, which is How It's Rigged the Economy. And so I say it's free, but it's not really free. What you're doing is you're giving up your email and phone number to get it, because we want to have a way to keep in contact with you. I think I sent out like 2 or 3 messages the past 2 years, so I'm not spamming people. But if you want to text Liberty Advisor, one word, Liberty Advisor, no spaces. The number is 71441. I'll send you my book, which is on all this stuff and how they rig all these different numbers. Because, if it's things like, you know, I just went the other day, I was at a hotel, and at the buffet, they had a little yogurt thing, and it was like 3 or 4 ounces of yogurt. And so a few years ago, that was probably 5 or 6 ounces. And so, oh, you know, the price only went up a little bit, but you know,
my dad always talks about wagon wheels, those chocolate, you know, cookie cake things that they've had for years, and how they used to be like the size of his head, and now they're like the size of his half of his hand. I mean, they're definitely shrinking the food, but they're doing it so gradually that people don't notice that they're getting less for their money.
Yeah, I mean, somehow people are still getting fatter throughout all this. So
it's amazing, isn't it?
But, you know, John was talking a lot about asset prices, and that's, you know, where I think a lot of the inflation is. And that's where you had Ben Bernanke in 2009 was even saying, you know, the goal of QE was to raise asset prices. And just from Zero Hedge on the 17th, there was an article entitled Fed President's Shocking Admission, We Need to Be Pretty Focused on Asset Prices, Not Just Inflation. And then it goes on to say, if you look at, and this is, I believe, the Boston Fed head, if you look at the last two recessions, they were not situations where inflation got out of control. They were situations where asset prices went way up and then came way down. So if your goal is to avoid recessions, I think we need to be pretty focused on asset prices, not just inflation, Rosengrid said. And said, yeah, in a moment of shocking candor and transparency. And so if you take a look at that quote, I mean, they're telling you what the game plan is. The game plan is the people who are already rich, people who already have the assets, that they're the ones who are going to be focused on keeping the asset price level up. And we mentioned, you know, one of the biggest factors when it comes to asset prices is going to be demographics. Yeah. And so on the one hand, you have the Federal Reserve that is printing more money, which is going to be, you know, a positive for asset prices. Well, positive if you own the assets, not a positive if you, you know, want to buy a house and get into those assets. And then on the other hand, you have demographics where, you know, it's been proven that the average American spends the most amount of money in their lifetime at age 46. Baby boom started in 1946, which means if you add 46 years to that, that's 1992. And so now you're at a situation where, you know, the oldest baby boomers are about, you know, 72, 73 years old right now. They're forced to take money out of their IRAs, their 401ks, called a required minimum distribution. And so there's forced asset selling right there. You know, a lot of people who, you know, probably in houses that were, you know, 2,500 to 5,000 square feet, and now the kids are moved out and they realize they didn't save enough money. So they've got to downsize because they've saved nothing, because the only asset they really have is that equity that's in their home. And so that's going to create a negative pressure as well. And then it's just a matter of that negative pressure mixed with the positive, I mean, I don't want to call it positive pressure, but the other, you know, the yin yang forces of the central bank selling
inflation,
assets.
Deflation, yeah, exactly.
So it's going to be a very tricky situation. And so that's why, you know, personally, I'm running, you know, a strategy where I think I'm one of the smartest people when it comes to this subject. And I don't even know how things are going to shake out. So anyone telling you they know how it's going to shake out definitely doesn't know. And so I have different methods where, you know, if it, you know, I'm hedged and I don't have all my eggs in any one basket, so, or my clients' eggs. And so in that regard, I don't necessarily care how things shake out. I just know that the answer is always, the problem, reaction, solution is always going to be, you know, the they, them, those who create all these problems, you know, are going to be the ones who then come in with all the solutions, and people are going to beg for the wrong stuff. And so, you know, what scares me going forward is, you know, having actual digital currencies that are going to be state-run digital currencies that are then mirrored with social credit scores. And then all of a sudden, you know, we criticize the government and, you know, we're not standing on a soapbox. We're in a gulag, not able to talk to anybody.
I'm not going to gulag.
Well, okay. So let's move on to the next end, guys. I think that it's important to mention something that's going to be very, very prevalent going forward, not into just 2020, but into the 2020s, going into 2030. Now, I think this is something that we should all be very concerned about. It's a cashless society. It's technocracy. It's the idea of the Internet of Things taking hold via 5G or 6G in the future, who knows, and the control of the masses via like this massive grid.
No one cares about 5G, Josh. Straight up.
7G.
Yeah, 14G. So this is the issue, though, because obviously we've seen the rise of China over the last 10 years, more than any decade previous. Obviously, going back to the 70s, Kissinger meeting with Mao Zedong, forming the alliance, going into the trilateral commission with Zbigniew Brzezinski, who wanted nothing more than a vast technocratic super state. We see that testing ground in China. We've said it before. If your money's in the bank, it's not yours, it's a bank's. If your money's always going through the banks, digital transactions, legal tender laws, usury under the social contract, then it's never your money, it's always a bank's, and you are essentially enslaved to the banking system, and then they can play their deck games with you, they can shove you down that bottomless pit, they can really stranglehold you. And that's really important to point out here, is that there's two sides to this, because one way or another, technology is going to advance. However, is it going to be the government that's going to be advancing it with the central banks and creating vast currencies that are tied to the banks that you never hold in your hands? Or are we going to have decentralized, properly, fundamentally useful cryptocurrencies, blockchain infrastructure technology, etc., and tie in things like gold and silver as wealth insurance as well? So going forward into the 2020s, I do think that without a doubt, John, we are going to be seeing a huge push towards technocracy like we've never seen before. It's almost impossible for the central banks and banks and all these other entities to survive if they don't go into that next realm where they, you know, don't have good depositor insurance. They could just rip your money out of the bank with bail-ins, and nothing anyone can do about it. They could track everyone everywhere. What are your thoughts going forward on the prevalence of, say, a cashless society versus a decentralized cashless system versus gold? I mean, what are your thoughts going 10 years ahead of time here?
Well, 10 years ahead of time, you know, potentially there could be some either a heavily totalitarian regime. Look at how fast it raised up in China. Actually, I just had a conversation at a restaurant with a friend of mine that was telling, you know, he was in China between 2008 to 2014. At 2014, they still hadn't had implemented the social credit system yet. So just think about that, how fast that has moved since 2014. I think it was like 2016, really, when we started to talk about it, when they started to, that they were going to really implement it.
And I could pull comments from that video if I wanted to. I'm not going to spend the time looking because we've done so many videos of people going, oh, you guys are crazy, that's stupid, get your tinfoil hats off.
Yeah, and of course, talking about Kissinger, you know, if it's true what this guy said to me, he's from Henderson, Vegas, he told me that he was brought over, he had a system that was similar to the social credit system. He was brought with Kissinger over to China, and then suddenly China took his, of course, he had an intellectual property because he believed in that. I don't believe in that at all. But he had his, system that he showed to the Chinese, and then magically, just a couple of years after, well, now you're sitting with a sesame credit system that they call it. And of course, that way of thinking, and what you're seeing, like I had a speech down in Nevada there where I talked about 5G in the police state. It's very fast. Technology is moving super fast ahead today. And of course, the problem here, though, if they're going to pull this off, they need to print a tremendous amount of, debt again. And I think probably that's a good thing for them, that they could use all that debt to, try to prop up, a little bit more with the infrastructure that it takes to build an actual properly 5G system. The ones that you're hearing that is out right now, it's fake. Yeah, it's fake 5G. It doesn't really, do the things that they say they would. With a real 5G system, you have surveillance basically everywhere, and you have a control grid watches every single thing that you do on social media, when you're out in public, who you're around, it'll actually, if you're together with Tim, for example, I go down to Phoenix, Arizona and hang out with him. Well, suddenly a camera picks me up with Tim, and Tim has lower score than me. Now my score gets downgraded. That's how it works in China.
I don't think Tim's going to have a lower score than you, though. He's a financial advisor. But
he's the wrong type of financial advisor. He likes the good things.
Yeah, saying bad things about the government is not good for your social credit score. They stop you from eating at restaurants, stop you from flying. If you do fly, or if you are allowed to fly, if you're just above that line, they'll blast a high-pitched sound into your ear, high-pitched frequency to make you feel uncomfortable or sick. I mean, this is crazy, and there's no doubt about it that this is going to happen going into the 2020s. Without a doubt, we'd be delusional to think otherwise, and we'd also be delusional to think that cryptocurrencies aren't going to exist in 2030. Whether or not it's the exact same ones that people might use today, one way or another, it's going to exist and people are going to use them. So before we go to Tim, I want to finish that with you, John. Cryptocurrencies and gold in the 2020s, how do you think that they're going to do, especially focusing on the decentralized ones that people make up?
Yeah, no, they're definitely going to be a set to take center place together and fighting against all these projects. I think I posted a list of all the centralized type of blockchain or electronic currencies. I think there were like 17 big projects right now with central banks that they were actually working on. So you have all of these. These centralized currencies are going to fight against what is the antidote, and which is decentralized currencies. They're going to, you know, go forth and back. And I believe, you know, they're going to try to outlaw these currencies, of course. And today they can actually like track, like there's a thing coming out that I listened to. It was actually on a Halloween guide. It was a Halloween thing where a guy was sitting out there talking about it, but they could actually track what they call tainted coins. So if your coin has been stolen at one point, for example, the Silk Road coins, like they're looked at as stolen coins, if they get deposited into a exchange, then they don't even have value because they were stolen at some point. So basically, they are trying to, you know, track the current, you know, open source, the open ledgers that are out there. And you know, implementing systems to track them as well as they can, of course, because they need to track every single thing that we do. So that's what we're going to fight. But I do believe that there's more and more emphasis coming out on some privacy coins and some privacy projects that are really helping. You know, you have the web browser stuff that's coming out with Brave. You have decentralized social media with Flow, U.Community, a whole bunch of other ones that are coming out there, you know, fighting decentralization. I think what we're going to see is we're going to see a move from the total centralization that happens naturally throughout society. If you go and look far back, the centralization of money, of government, everything goes in cycles. So you get, you know, a full type of centralization. Look at China. They're really starting to hit the back end of what they can do with centralization. But the problem is also China has a massive debt bubble. They had already three banks collapse with bank runs over there. And so they're in trouble. And I think what we're going to see is we're going to see gold and silver are going to fight. They're going to be there together. They're going to be more of a wealth insurance type of thing where if you have it, you know, your wealth is going to be saved. But then on the other hand, when the capital controls comes in, when you can't move your money out of the bank or at all, even take money out of the bank if you go fully cashless, well, now you need other ways of having some form of privacy, because basically if the governments do that and the banks are doing that to you, you have zero privacy left in your life, because that's what cash really is today. Cash is privacy, because you can, you know, privately me and Tim can make a transaction between the two of us and be able to use that. But what's going to happen is probably going to see, if not a collapse over that next decade, you're going to see, you know, gold and silver being at the forefront of the end of, if it goes as far as the end of the decade, you know, of like all the way to 2030, you're going to see a prevalence of maybe a two-sided society where you have, you know, the people that are awake, that are using all these tools to fight the current system versus, you know, the centralized, you know, part of society that is fully controlled.
Yeah, I mean, tyranny comes under the guise of convenience, and so can the great marvels that we on the free market push forward. And I think privacy coins also help in that a lot as far as cryptocurrencies go. We see countries around the world swapping out one by one. Eventually, they're going to swap out of the U.S. dollar. The faith is going to be lost. The military can no longer defend the faith in the U.S. dollar. They can hardly do it today. Tim, let's go into that a bit. So regarding gold, silver, and crypto. Going forward, well, what are your thoughts on the prevalence of these three major assets that people are, you know, obviously looking at for a safe haven?
I can make just one comment quickly on China before we get going. So I was looking at an article today from Zero Hedge that's called "These Are the International Brands That Have Apologized to China." And actually, right now, it's not on Zero Hedge anymore, but I had the link saved. So for whatever reason, it's not on Zero Hedge, even though it was earlier today. And it just goes through all these different companies like Dior, Danbier, Swarovski, Calvin Klein, Coach. And a lot of times it's like, you know, what was the big offense? It's like, oh, we showed in a ad, there was 2 seconds where it showed a map in the background corner of a room and it didn't have Taiwan as part of China. And so, oh, we're so sorry. But it was like all these companies just kowtowing to China. And so now I'm probably never going to be able to go to China because their AI.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I'm not.
Monster, right? Like they have that, they have control over, you know, they're trying to do what the IMF did with the Asia Investment Bank and doing exactly the same strategy, of course, and having control and having that power, Tim, as you said, you know, it really takes away for free speech right there, that they could be so powerful that for the, you know, the income that NBA and others have, that they were able to do this.
Well, I mean, it should be noted that China, in my opinion, if we're going to make predictions going into the next decade, China, in my opinion, is the biggest concern in the entire world, not just from the monetary system perspective, from the governance perspective too. As G. Edward Griffin recently said in an interview I did with him, it's one bully versus another and neither are good. So it's like, which one's going to reach the top first? But one way or another, China is set to surpass the United States. So is India. And I think we should all be very, very concerned because we don't want one empire, but we don't want the other either. And we should be concerned about the technocratic push and totalitarianism that China pushes forward and how everyone's already bound down to them.
Fake news, Josh. We just finished a phase one trade deal. U.S.
But I mean, like, think about it this way. I mean, it's like the biggest country in the world. And I don't think either any of us that are in this video right now could safely go to China and hope for the best. I mean, honestly, it's scary. It is scary that we've gotten to the point where this government that's killed tens of millions of people is on top. And I think, and I'm going to get a lot of controversy for this, but I think that this is very likely way more dangerous and detrimental to the world than even Hitler was or Stalin was. I think that we are dealing with a technocratic, communist, fascio-communist society that is unbelievably dangerous, and that is why we need to build on these technological marvels before the governments can get ahead of us on it. And China's already way ahead in so many ways. China will crash too eventually, but I think that we should be very, very, we would be smart to be prepared for what China has next in store for us, because they are definitely planning far faster and far more ahead than the US is. But anyway, Tim, let's cut off China for a moment here and let's just talk about gold, silver, and crypto, because I think that this is, it goes into the solution that we can utilize to get around these problems. Because as bad as China might be, if we can develop faster than, you know, the Chinese government on the free market, and you know, statistically the free market is far more efficient, then we can really get ahead of the curve here. So what do you think of gold, silver, and crypto by going through the 2020s into 2030 even?
Okay, yeah, well, one thing that that John had brought up was that there was certain Bitcoin that were bought on Silk Road, or that the government deems, you know, are not like legit Bitcoin because they've been used in certain activities that they don't deem are legitimate. And so there are places that are, you know, pretty progressive. I mean, and I use that in a good sense, not the liberal, fake liberal progressive sense. But there are places like Wyoming that have laws. And I know we have an interview with actually the lady behind all those laws that we haven't released an interview yet, but that's coming up, Caitlin Long. And so they have different laws in the books where I forgot what the exact time statute was, but let's say you have your Bitcoin there and you've had it for more than 6 months, it might be 6 months, somewhere between 6 months and 2 years. I can't remember exactly. And once you've had title of that Bitcoin for, let's say, 6 months, then now it's yours free and clear. And even if it was used in some nefarious activities, you know, as long as you weren't a part of that, that's your Bitcoin. And you also are, corporations are forced to, you can't be forced to give up your private key there. There's some other goodies too. So we'll tease that one later on. We've got that interview coming out. But yeah, places that are, you know, thinking ahead of the curve, you know, I think you're going to see those places, you know, getting a lot more business. And then places like New York and California and Illinois, I know a lot of crypto companies, they won't even touch New York. Yeah. They're like, hey, we'll do business anywhere except
license.
North Korea. Shapeshift, for example. So, you know, going forward, you know, it just depends on whether or not in the next 10 years that the dollar does collapse. You know, I think this is sort of a controversial opinion, but I think throughout all this, temporarily, the dollar will get stronger because there'll be people will always do the wrong thing at the wrong time. They'll rush into the dollar. The dollar will actually get stronger throughout all this, but then there'll be a certain point where you're going to want to take your dollars and put it into the actual real assets, because those real assets will then explode in value once people realize, oh crap, I just put all my money into this unsecured you know, I'm now an unsecured creditor of the bank.
Well, we're certainly seeing that now, though, Tim, right? I mean, like, we're seeing a huge amount of people flooding into gold and even crypto to a certain extent, though a lot of speculation is still going on. But with gold especially, I mean, the private ownership of gold is at 50-50 with public ownership, and that's quite historic. We went into that with David Morgan earlier this year from the Lode Project. I don't know. I can't help but think that there's a lot of big institutional investors as well as, you know, mom and pops and individuals that are getting into gold right now. And there seems to be some, I wouldn't say an awakening, but there's a shift happening at the very least.
Yeah, I mean, I'm directly where the rubber meets the road. And obviously the people that are coming to me are more, you know, crypto and silver and gold up than the average person, you know, that's seeking me out. But, you know, when it comes to the average person that's out there, they don't care at all about gold or silver or Bitcoin. You know, obviously people that are listening to us now, you know, our listeners, you know, are probably a lot more exposed and have a lot more as a percentage than the average person out there. But I still think, but, you know, that means there's a lot of room to run on it. If you know, hardly anyone, I mean, most financial advisors, I don't think have allocations to gold, or if they do, you know, it's probably, you know, super small, and most of your clients probably don't actually hold it physically. So, but, you know, that is an opportunity though. If no one's really talking about it, you know, right, that's the time to buy something, not when everybody is, you know, saying everything is, you know, going awesome. So, you know, and that's like any asset. I mean, right now you take a look at the Bitcoin fear and greed index. I believe yesterday it was at a 23 or 24 on a scale of 100. And that indicates extreme fear. Last year, we started the year January 1st at either a 23 or 24, which is extreme fear. Mm-hmm. And as of right now, Bitcoin is up, I believe, over, I mean, I haven't checked today, so it's dangerous to say this, but, you know, last time I checked, it was up over 100% year to date. And so, like any asset, yeah, when people are extremely euphoric, that's the time to run or sell or trim your positions. And when people are extremely, you know, doubtful, and you see like the Time magazine where, you know, the economy is holding on by a thread that's about to burst, then that's usually the time to buy. Like, and that's, right, and I'll say this is not financial advice, it's just my opinion. Talk to your own financial advisor.
Well, of course. I do want to let everyone know, if they want to be a client of Tim's, check the link below. There's a bit.ly link below the video in the description and the comments. And of course, get John's book, The End of Freedom, How Our Monetary System Enslaves Us, as well as Canada, the Greatest Economy in the World? All linked below and on Amazon, etc. And my plug is float.app, F-L-O-T-E.app, where I'm posting exclusive videos now because it's not safe for YouTube, and YouTube will take our channel down for the slightest little infringement. But anyway, finishing it off, because this has gone very long, and it's a nightmare to edit these kinds of videos. There's three of us. So I do want to close it off. But first, before we close it off, I'm going to ask two questions in one here, and we'll try to stick to those questions. First, where do you think Deutsche Bank will be in 2030? And second, with that said, do you, like, with all of your instincts, do you think that the U.S. dollar will exist in its current state in 2030? We'll go to you first, John.
I think I'm going to say no to both of those, because it's so bad right now. Deutsche Bank is basically at, you know, the lower Lehman levels, where, you know, the highs, I forgot where the highs were. I think back in, even in 1992, I think it was $44. Well, now it's, you know, sitting around $7 somewhere. So it's clearly a collapsed institution that are just desperately trying to reorganize and do whatever they can in order to save themselves. So they're screwed. They're not going to exist in 2030. It would have been a massive bailout. I don't know how they're going to do it. Probably like, how are you going to, you know, print $43 trillion worth of derivatives to save that, you know, with the German economy being
at, John, you don't know the Germans then.
Yeah, being at $7 trillion, the GDP of Germany. So of course that's, you know, I don't think that's going to happen. And then the US dollar in its current form, no, because I think what's going to happen, and there's a lot of push, you had the Fed Now network that they're talking about, that's going to be, you know, the electronic transfer system in 10 years, because the technology moves fast. I do not think the US dollar in its current, you know, half cash, half electronic, no, sorry, 1%, whatever it is, yeah, cash form, and then the rest electronic. I don't think it's going to exist like that. I think we even might have, you know, an SDR system where the SDR is the bailed out all the central banks, and then you have the underlying, you know, devalued US dollar and other, right, currencies.
There's so much to say, so much to do, and so little time to do it. And we'll go to Tim right away over this. As simple as you could put it, Tim, do you think that Deutsche Bank is going to exist in 2030? And do you think that the U.S. dollar in its current form will exist in 2030?
I think Deutsche Bank will either be bought or put out of existence by then. But I think there will be some bank that ends up buying Deutsche Bank's, you know, quote unquote, good assets that they have left. And if John sort of stole my thunder on the dollar, and I actually wrote these notes down as he was talking, and then he went right into what I was going to say. But I think they're going to have, you know, like a Libra-like currency that's going to be issued by the Fed. And then that is then going to be tied into, you know, a combination of the Bank of International Settlements and the IMF to basically – there'll be a global worldwide like SDR type system. And then the dollar component of that will still be used in America and we'll still call it the dollar, although it will be tied into a bigger system. And then if the powers that be have their way, they'll want to then marry that with some sort of global carbon tax. That's why they're pushing people like Greta Thunberg out there, you know, trotting her out, because it's not about, you know, actually fixing these problems, assuming they are problems. It's about control. It's always been about control. You know, people that fly around private jets all around the world don't really care about, you know, what is going on in the economy. They want you to bail them out and they want your money to do so. That's what it's always been about. That we could go on for 5 hours about that. But yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be some sort of state sanctioned federalreserve.gov coin that's tied into the international system.
Right. And I would say the same as well for Canada, as we see the Bank of Canada has been openly pushing for that right now. Yeah, most of them. Yeah. And that's been evident. And I think China will probably buy up a lot of Africa. And I think that we were already seeing that. I think interest rates are probably going to go below zero in many, many countries around the world. We're seeing it go in that direction in Australia, in Britain, with the EU, in Canada, and in the US, and so many other places. All I know is that the most important thing going into the next decade is you, the people watching this, and what you do next, because at the end of the day, no matter how bad it might be out there, it comes down to you fixing those problems, not looking for someone else to fix it for you. You can be the change you wish to see. You can be independent. Even if you don't have money, you can become a more self-sustainable, a more efficient person that can take care of yourself, take care of your family. As I always say, food, water, shelter, self-defense. You're not gathering things to the toughest guy on the block. And then from the monetary perspective, you know, gold and silver, in my opinion, and cryptocurrencies as well, that are useful, that that actually have a use case. So make sure to look into that. But of course, if people are interested, they can go to Tim Pachote if they want to be a client of his. Again, links below. And of course, John's books as well. And finishing it off, I just want to thank all of you out there that have been watching Wham in this past decade. We haven't been around for a decade. We've been around for almost a decade. And it's been amazing being able to bring you guys videos. Of course, our viewership has been cut down dramatically. So if you got around the algorithm and are watching us right now, thank you so much. I want everyone to write in the comments below, Happy New Year. So I know you've watched up to this point. That's our survey for today, just to make sure it helps the algorithm and helps us know that you're actually watching to the end. So I really appreciate you guys who've watched all the way through. Obviously, you're passionate about these issues, and you should be, because this is your future. This is the future of your family and those around you. And it's never been more important to understand money and understand, therefore, how to avoid the enslavement of those that print the money. And there's so much more to talk about, but we can only go into so much today. So also make sure to get check out the Wham merchandise below. You can get an End the Fed or an F the Fed shirt. We got all sorts of stuff. Taxation is theft. And we got nobody for president 2020. You know, we got lots of stuff. So make sure to check out our Teespring store below. Check those links, pledges, Patreon, Subscribestar, GoFundMe, Float.app, all of those. We really appreciate you guys joining us. And until next time, we'll try to do more of these three-person videos. It's not easy to do. And obviously, a lot of people have the same ideas, so it's hard to fit all that in. But nonetheless, we will bring you more of these in the future. We appreciate everyone joining us. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, John. And happy 2020, guys. End of a decade, beginning of another one. We hope you all the best, and a Merry Christmas to you as well. Until next time, this is Josh Sirotson, John Snyson, and Tim Pachote signing out from World Alternative Media. Do it all together, guys. Find the truth. Be the change. Like what you see here, Wham! Don't forget to check the links below. GoFundMe, Patreon. We cannot do it without you guys. Every donation is extremely, extremely appreciated, as we're getting incredibly shadow banned. We've lost 80% of our audience since January of 2019 and counting. They are ripping us apart here on YouTube, and the only thing we could do in the meantime as we prepare for the next big step is to ask for help from the viewers that support our free information that we try to post on a daily basis. You can also find us on Subscribestar, where just a dollar a month, that's all it takes, a dollar a month is all it takes to truly make a huge difference. If everyone gave a dollar a month, it would change everything for independent media, and we could win this information war, and we can defeat the mainstream medias eventually. And of course, on Subscribestar, we post subscriber-only content that you'll only see on Subscribestar, so make sure to pledge there, become a patron. That makes a huge difference, guys. And also, don't forget to check out our Bitcoin address below in the comments and description, as well as on the screen for you to scan if you please. And also, don't forget to subscribe to us on the alternatives. We will likely be deleted by YouTube in the next 2 years. It's already happening on a vast scale. So make sure to find us on float.app. That's float.app at Josh Sigurdsson, as well as at Wham, W-A-M. Float.app is replacing every social media, and I mean, it's just incredible the opportunities it provides for not just creators, but for the average person who wants to get away from these nannies telling them what they can or cannot see. They plan to replace Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Twitch, Tumblr, Reddit, and Patreon. You could subscribe to us on Float and pledge with cryptocurrency. It's really innovative. We are also on BitChute at World Alternative Media, as well as so many others, Minds, PocketNet. You can find us at World Alternative Media on Instagram. There's many options. And finally, don't forget to join us at Anarchapulco 2020, the famous event, the best liberty event known to mankind, other than perhaps Anarcho Vegas 2020. There are two major events coming up that we are extremely excited about, and you can use promo code WAM, that's W-A-M, and save 10% on your tickets to these legendary conferences. There's so many amazing people speaking there. You won't want to miss it. So make sure to support in any way you can, even if it's just sharing our videos, pressing like, pressing to be notified. Anything helps, folks. You are the change you wish to see. Thanks for watching, everyone. And until next time, this is Josh Sigurdsson signing out from World Alternative Media. Find the truth. Be the change.
I'm sure you have already changed people's minds in your young age because you're involved, and I like that.